There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
We're off now to discuss Einstein's fridge and many other things about thermodynamics, the science of heat and cold. And let's talk to Paul Senn about that very subject. Morning, Paul.
Morning.
You've had a fairly traumatic morning. Well, you've had a gas leak in your house.
Yeah, a suitably thermodynamic event.
Thank goodness you've got it sorted, or it certainly would have been. My goodness,
yeah,
me.
You'd have heard a bang and me disappearing
off
the line.
Oh, my goodness.
Gone wrong.
That would be dedication to the cause of thermodynamics, absolutely. Let's start, first of all, Paul, with the title, Einstein's Fridge, which is not a kind of a made-up title. It's actually got some relevance, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a little-known fact about Einstein that he was actually far from being a sort of absent-minded prof. He was very interested in practical matters. You know, his father and his uncle ran a business selling electrical dynamos.
Wow.
So he grew up in a very sort of practical household. And in the 1920s, when fridges were fairly early on in domestic appliances in their history, they were quite dangerous, actually, because they used pretty toxic chemicals to do the cooling.
Oh.
And there was a tragic story in Berlin in the 20s of a family that died because their fridge leaked overnight and it killed them all.
Goodness.
So Einstein and one of his collaborators and colleagues, a man called Leo Szilard, decided that they would try and design a safer fridge, which would not be dangerous if it malfunctioned, basically.
Wow.
And they secured, I mean, Einstein was already quite famous by then in the general public. He'd sort of become known by then. And they designed this and they got quite a bit of funding from a couple of companies that you may have heard of, like Electrolux,
yes,
the Swedish company. And they got funding from AEG, which
wow.
was...
Wow!
So those, which are still going, those concerns, I think. So they... And they committed quite a lot of money to these, and it was actually several different designs they came up with. And they built a prototype or several prototypes. They patented it in many countries around the world. And Einstein, of course, had worked as a patent clerk, so he knew
right.
all about the process of how you patent invention. So he, two things happened, which the reason no one's ever heard of these devices. Is the technology they came up with, although it was very safe and quite clever, it was quite complicated.
Okay.
And what happened was in America, they discovered Freon, which is a much safer refrigerant than what was being used before. And in the end, the fridge industry went for that because it was a sort of easier way to make the fridges safer than to sort of rebuild them in a very different way. As Einstein.
How interesting. So if Einstein's fridges had caught on, you could ostensibly have the fridge engineer coming around, turning up and taking one look at it and going, do you know what? You'd have to be Einstein to fix this.
Yeah, exactly. And Einstein, you know, he was very, very interested in thermodynamics and that's inspired much of the science he's more famous for as well. So there is, And fridges are a very, I always say this, people sort of probably have a sense of how their car works, but
yeah.
I bet most people don't really know how fridges work, and they are quite mysterious in some ways.
Yes, they are.
You do need to be Einstein to really understand them.
Brilliant. And this is all a brilliant look at the extraordinary people who discovered the laws of thermodynamics. I did physics, maths and chemistry A-level, so this was rammed into me at school, but frankly, for the rest of the world, it's reasonably tedious as a subject. But the people involved are far from tedious in this story.
Well, I think so. I think that for me, I've always felt that scientists are somewhat underrated as story sources. You know, like people, if you were writing a book about Picasso, you know, you would inevitably talk about his, you know, his family life, his love life, all sorts of things to do with him as a person.
Yeah.
And yet somehow scientists don't often get spoken about like that. And I think that's a mistake. I hope to redress that with this book, because I think that the personality of a scientist is firstly fascinating, usually. They're very interesting people. They're very driven, very motivated, very sort of highly strung often.
Yeah.
You know, people like that. So they're interesting characters by definition almost. And secondly, their personality informs the work they do, the way they work, just as much as Picasso's personality must have inspired his art. I think Einstein's personality, you know, very much inspired the way he did science. So I think it's interesting for both those reasons. And that was sort of why I wanted to write the book, actually, because I believe the history of science and the history of the people who create science is really fascinating above all else, and also incredibly relevant. I mean, if you look at what we're doing now, speaking over a digital communications network spanning a continent, I mean, which we take for granted, but all that's possible in large part due to the people I write about, and some others too, but
absolutely. And of course, at its heart, thermodynamics, for people who aren't familiar with the term, is the science, as you put it, of fire, ice and the universe. It's quite important.
Yeah. It's in a very prosaic sense, it's the science of heat. But I always think I start the book with this. I think it's a terrible name, actually. I wish someone would come up with a better name.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the pillars of physics. I mean, people talk about physics having three pillars, which is quantum theory, Einstein's general relativity, and thermodynamics.
Yeah.
And quantum theory and relativity are good names. You know, they're sort of enigmatic and mysterious, and they make you think, oh, what sounds? But thermodynamics feels very clunky. Mm. And I think that's part of the reason, actually, it doesn't get talked about so much. But essentially, it's about energy and another thing called entropy, which is a bit harder to explain. But you know, you think how important energy is to our lives, you know, from my gas, electricity bills, you know, to the calories you count, you know, when you're eating food and all that sort of stuff. So it's a really, really important concept. And energy was discovered, if you like, by scientists in the 19th century as a thing, you know, as part of the founding of thermodynamics.
Yes. Energy, from my deepest recollection in the first law of thermodynamics, is one of these fundamental components which cannot be created or destroyed. It can only be converted from one form to another. Well, when they wrote that, they hadn't seen me at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, let me tell you.
I'm sure you break many laws of physics. But yeah.
Now, let's talk about some of these people whose names crop up in the book. I think it was Lord Kelvin who coined the term thermodynamics. And of course, we know those who've done physics know the word Kelvin very well. As a proud Scot, I think James Watt was reasonably important in this.
Yeah. Well, you should be. I live in Glasgow, which is actually
fantastic.
Yeah, I live like a 5-minute walk from the River Kelvin, which I thought was always a very suitable place to write a book about thermodynamics.
As the Glaswegians used to say, oh, you're from Kelvin side, are you, by the way?
Yeah, I am. I live in Kelvin side, exactly. North Kelvin side.
Very nice. I used to be in Pollock Shields, so there we go.
Oh, right. Yeah,
For those who don't know what we're talking about, apologies.
I love Glasgow.
It's a great place.
Fantastic. Great city, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it's absolutely right. So the Scots have a very proud sort of tradition in science, and Kelvin and James Watt and the whole shipbuilding industry that was so, you know, impressive in the, you know, in the Valley of the Clyde in the 19th century and even into the 20th century was a really important motivator for the science that people like Kelvin did, because, you know, they were surrounded by these huge factories building these steamships, and, you know, they wanted to figure out how to make better engines a lot of the time, you know.
Yeah.
And so that was a very important thing. And and the other person that I think is interesting is James Joule, whom I think that people familiar with the measurement of energy, you measure it in Europe particularly.
Yep.
You measure energy in joules. And James Joule was a brewer from Manchester.
Goodness me.
And what I was finding interesting, in Europe, you measure energy in joules, and Joule was an Englishman. And in Britain, we still measure energy quite often in calories. And the calorie is actually a French term.
Brilliant. We should swap them. We should do a trade with the French.
It's one of the ironies that we stick to the French term and the Europeans use an English term.
It's funny. For those who are not familiar with Joule as the measurement, it's spelt J-O-U-L-E. So it's very much a French word.
Like a French word, but he was not. But he was, his family were from Lancashire, and his grandfather, I think, set up a very early brewery in Manchester, and it was a very wise decision because it sort of coincided with the expansion of Manchester in this huge cotton, mill manufacturing center. And Manchester was known as Cottonopolis back in those days.
Wow.
And all the people who came to work in those factories, they needed beer. And the Joule family were very, happy to provide it.
How funny. Now, and by complete coincidence, in about 45 minutes' time, I'm going to be talking to Alan Turing's nephew.
I know him, Dermot.
I've got Dermot on the show in 45 minutes. And Alan pops up in your book, and that's a great surprise to me.
Yeah, so I have another hat, if you like, as a television producer. And I co-produced a film about Alan Turing for which we interviewed Dermot. In fact, I quote him. I quote some of that interview in the book. Actually, he's very interesting, and he talks extremely interestingly about his uncle.
Absolutely,
And this is again a sort of side of Turing that people I think aren't familiar with, which is that. So he's fairly famous, obviously, for his incredible work as a codebreaker during World War II. And also, he's also fairly well-known because he sort of wrote one of the founding papers of computer technology. So he was a very early pioneer, and he worked on building some very early computers in England, in Manchester, and in Surrey as well. But he also was very interested in biology, which is less well-known. And he was a tremendous pioneer in this because biological systems, as we know, like compared to pure physics, are much messier. You know, nothing's quite as regular. The shapes are all sort of slightly off. But Turing believed, and so most people didn't think mathematics and computing had much to say about biology. But it's a mark of Turing's genius, actually, that he thought otherwise. And he then did he sort of set himself the problem of how can I see if mathematics can help understand, biological systems. And what he was interested in, what he looked at, was the way in a biological system energy spreads out through a sort of, and he picked the example of a sort of hypothetical clump of cells in an embryo. So when an embryo is first created, it's just a few cells and they're all identical, but somehow as it grows they differentiate, get finger cells and arm cells and all so he was interested, how could this happen, how is it that these cells know to switch on in different ways in different places? And he sort of pioneered this idea that as energy spread through the cells, if the conditions are right, it can somehow trigger like a sort of coordinated dance almost, so that the cells, form into pattern. You don't just form randomly, they kind of turn into different things according to a pattern.
Amazing.
And it's known as morphogenesis. It's a principle. And it took a long time. People were very skeptical. And then tragically, Turing died, you know, just not long after he started doing this work, which is a whole very tragic tale, which I'm, you know, people, you know, we can make, which I'm sure Dermot will tell
yes,
you about.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
It's a very, it's one of the, it's an awful tragedy the way he died. But so unfortunately, his work was cut short into this because he'd only started doing it sort of for 2 or 3 years when he died. And then for many years, it was sort of not regarded as particularly important, or many people were skeptical of it. And then in the around 2010, 2012, people began to biologists working in the field began to discover that actually Turing was right. These processes do occur in living systems.
How amazing.
So it was a tremendous vindication of his work. Actually, I felt I wanted to talk about it because it's sort of not a side of Turing that not many people are aware of, especially, although he's sort of become more famous now.
Yes.
And in fact, he is the face of the new £50 note.
That's correct. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And rightly so, frankly, after all the
rightly
grief
so,
he went through.
Absolutely.
Yeah. In terms of the subject matter of this, thermodynamics, to kind of put it in context here, particularly now, in fact, again, here's another coincidence. It's Earth Day today, isn't it? And so, you know, climate change is very much at the forefront of that conversation. And, you know, without a basic grasp of thermodynamics, it's almost impossible to understand how the environment is being changed.
Exactly. I mean, the epilogue of my book actually talked about another scientist called Tyndall, John Tyndall, who worked at the Royal Institution at London in the mid 19th century. It was Michael Faraday's successor there, and it was there in the 19th century that he discovered the greenhouse effect.
Yeah,
he did these extraordinary experiments where he showed that it's the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that actually retains heat. And he was able to show that the other gases, which like oxygen and nitrogen, you know, don't actually. So if there was no carbon dioxide in our atmosphere at all, it would be much colder than it is.
Yes.
But obviously the flip side of that is if the carbon dioxide gets too high, even more heat gets retained. So the physics of climate change, the sort of fundamental physics of it, has been known for a very long time.
Absolutely.
And it's sort of product of thermodynamics, yes, absolutely.
And, of course, its ultimate importance is it will really tell us how the universe will end.
Yeah. So this was, again, Kelvin, we were talking about him earlier. He was the first person to really sort of see this, that the whole of what's called the entropy of the universe is forever increasing. And one way to imagine that is that all the heat that's sort of concentrated in stars and, you know, in hot spots, even in your kitchen, but just all when you're left to its own devices, that will always dissipate. It will always even out. Mm. You know, the temperature differences will always equalize.
Yeah.
And Kelvin saw this was a great sort of cosmological principle. And he realized that ultimately it's just like a cup of tea. If you leave it on your counter in your kitchen, it will eventually end up the same temperature as the rest of the kitchen. He sort of saw that would happen to the whole universe, that all the hot spots would gradually dissipate. And eventually we'll end up with a universe where everything's exactly the same temperature. And at that point, nothing can happen. Things will just stop.
Wow.
Now, having said that, the end of the universe is still quite mysterious in many ways.
Yes.
And it's a long way off.
Thank goodness for that. Yeah, we've had enough to worry about the last year, frankly, without the end of the universe.
The least of our worries.
Yeah, fantastic. Brilliant book. Really interesting stuff, not just for those who are interested in science, but interested in people. And that's the important thing about these guys. Yeah.
Thank you.
Lovely to talk to you today. Einstein's Fridge is the name of the book. Well, say hello to Kelvin's Side for me.
I will do.
When I worked for Radio Clyde, there used to be a fantastic music festival in Kelvin Grove Park, which I used to record every year for Radio Clyde. And I believe they've redone the stage or something, haven't they, recently?
That's right, they have. I mean, it's been obviously last year was quiet, but hopefully they'll be back in action soon. Fingers crossed.
Oh, fantastic. Well, lovely to talk to you today, Paul. Paul Senn,
Thank
the book
you.
Is called Einstein's Fridge. You take care of yourself, Paul. All the best.
All right. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.